Well, leaks of the upcoming 9/11 Commission report suggest that the mammoth document will include, as we just said, recommendations to create the post of intelligence czar. You may not be aware that there are, in fact, 15 intelligence agencies. Of course, that begs the question, how many can you name? CIA, FBI, NSA. Since that's about where most of us run out of acronyms, today we want to prepare for the report by discussing what all these agencies are and how they interact. Joining us in Studio 3A is Ellen Lapson, president and CEO of the Henry L. Stimson Center and a former member of the National Intelligence Council. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Neil.
15 agencies. We know of a few, but all of them?
Well, I can give you 9 of the 15 belong to the Defense Department.
Okay.
So they are all Air Force intelligence, Army intelligence, Coast Guard, Navy intelligence, et cetera, and the Defense Intelligence Agency, which over the years has had a changing relationship to these service intelligence organizations. Today, the Defense Intelligence Agency represents all of military intelligence, and there's even been talk, in addition to the talk of creating an intelligence czar, of creating a military intelligence czar as a separate function within our government. But let's focus on the 6 that are not part of DOD. The CIA was created in the late 40s because President Truman believed that he needed one place where intelligence from all sources, collected from lots of different kinds of platforms, could come together and where people would process information very objectively and would look not only at military threats but at any other issues that the president was interested in.
In addition, he added in what the functions of what used to be during World War II, the OSS.
That's correct. So the CIA combined both an analytic function, reporting to the president, not reporting to another policymaker, and this clandestine service idea. So that's where that was initially the only place in the U.S. government where people were trained and recruited to be spies and to go and collect intelligence from human sources around the world. Today, I should say, the Defense Intelligence Agency also has the Defense Human Service. So they run a sort of purely military parallel clandestine service that is now sometimes competing with the CIA. Let me just finish where the other civilian parts of the intelligence bureaucracy come from. There are intelligence functions within the following agencies: the Department of Energy, the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of State, the Department of Treasury, and the Federal Bureau of Investigation. So that's where you get 6 purely civilian intelligence contributors to the big intelligence machine, and then all the others are one way or another part of the defense establishment.
And among the biggest of those, the NSA, the National Security Agency.
Yes, the NSA, which previously was never acknowledged its existence in public.
No such agency.
No such agency, exactly, is the place where we do all kinds of electronic surveillance through satellites and other means. And the National Reconnaissance Office, which also was previously quite unknown to the American public, is the place that manages and works on the development of new technologies for what we call technical means of intelligence. National technical means are ways that we gather information from sensors, satellites, et cetera, and it stands in contrast to human intelligence, which is two human beings talking to each other and then writing down what they heard.
We're talking with Ellen Lapson, the president and CEO of the Henry L. Stimson Center. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Why do we have so many different intelligence services? If there's the Defense Intelligence Agency, as you say, why does the Coast Guard need its own intelligence?
I think in the early years of, first of all, the military services had intelligence even before we created this National Security Act of 1947 that tried to rationalize or set up the current national security system. So the military folks always had intelligence for operational purposes.
Important to know what's on the other side of that hill.
Exactly. Who your enemy is, what kind of equipment the enemy has. As you prepare for battle, the intelligence function is absolutely core to any military activity. So they all have had their intelligence even way back in history. But if we take just the last 50 years, I think what's happened is a little bit the bureaucratic imperative that once everybody wants to have proximity to their boss. So, for example, if you're the Secretary of State, you want an in-house capability. You know there's the CIA a few miles away, but in ages when information technology was less robust, there might have been a day's delay in getting the latest reports from the CIA. So there was this bureaucratic imperative to create in-house capability. I would argue that given where technology is today, that argument has been seriously weakened.
Well, given the bureaucratic imperative you talk about, and we're all familiar with Parkinson's Law, isn't the multiplication of these agencies, doesn't it lead to the kind of turf wars that we've been reading about so much?
Yes, and one fears that intelligence analysts spend more time competing with their peers rather than focusing on the quality of the output. I mean, intelligence analysts, I should say, take their jobs very seriously, but it is true in a bureaucratic culture, some energy gets, I would say, wasted on turf wars and competing with the folks across town who are doing virtually the same thing. So you do have a redundancy of mission in some of the larger intelligence agencies.
Now, we mentioned the CIA at the beginning, the one everybody knows about. The director of the CIA, well, his title is actually Director of Central Intelligence. Theoretically, he has an oversight role over all of these intelligence services, though he doesn't control the budgets of most of the biggest ones.
Correct. And he does convene several boards where the heads of all of the intelligence agencies, including the military ones, come together under his direction to set some priorities, to set some guidelines, to compare notes and see where the gaps are the greatest. That's called the National Foreign Intelligence Board. And he does play a very important leadership role there. What is coming out of these latest commissions is this chronic issue of an overlap of authority between the Secretary of Defense, who, after all, is the boss of probably 80% of the resources that are spent on intelligence.
Some $40 billion a year.
Perhaps up to a number that high. Only a few years ago it was is considerably less than that, but it's been obviously augmented since September 11th. But the Director of Central Intelligence has responsibility but not necessarily line authority. He doesn't pick the directors of these military intelligence agencies, for example. But he does convene them, and he does try to create a sense of collegiality and a sense of common purpose among them. It's clearly that part of the process that some people in Washington think needs to be fixed.
And we'll get the details of how the 9/11 Commission proposes to fix it later this week when they release their report. Ellen Lapson, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Ellen Lapson served 5 years as Vice Chairman of the National Intelligence Council, which is a think tank. She's currently President and CEO of the Henry L. Stimson Center here in Washington. I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.